You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Broadway Gives Back Podcast. I'm your host, Jan Svensson. This podcast spotlights Broadway actors, shows, and organizations in their pursuit of social impact and philanthropy. Join us as some of the brightest lights on Broadway share their stories about their favorite charities and how they got involved, and the people and the causes who benefited from these philanthropic efforts. My guest this week made her Broadway debut as Roxy Hart in the hit revival of Chicago. And now she's returned to that show during Broadway's reopening, but this time as Velma Kelly. Bianca Marroquin started her artistic career in Mexico City in productions of Beauty and the Beast, Rent, Phantom, Vagina Monologues, and Chicago. She's also starred in The Heights and Pajama Game on Broadway. And she played Cheetah Rivera in FX's Fosse Verdon and will soon star in Apple TV series Acapulco this fall. Bianca is also the Viva Broadway ambassador, helping to bridge the gap between Broadway and the Latinx community. I'm so thrilled to have her here today. Bianca, my friend, welcome to the Broadway Gives Back podcast.
Jan, it's so good to speak to you. So good to hear your voice. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Well, I feel so lucky to know you. You are one of the most beautiful people I know, both inside and outside. I was wondering if we could play a little game where I ask you some rapid-fire questions so that our listeners can get to know you better as well. Are you game? are you game for that?
I'm game.
Okay. All right. So what is the first thing you notice about somebody?
If they make eye contact with you, their eyes. Yeah.
So Halloween is coming up. What is your favorite costume?
I'm very proud of a Wonder Woman costume I made for myself. I think this was 2014. And I went to this party at the Soho House I was invited to. And I made it all. I sewed it. I did it all myself. And I truly felt like a Wonder Woman.
You are a Wonder Woman. So Bianca, if I had a time machine and I could transport you anywhere in the world to any time, where would you go?
Any time with my mother. Because she passed 14 years ago, and I need her now more than ever. And so I dream about her a lot. So I would give anything to have like a lunch with my mother, to ask her so many questions.
Now you're making me cry. Describe yourself in three words.
Energetic, honest, and music.
What do you most give a damn about?
Justice.
What is the biggest mistake you think you've ever made in your life?
Being afraid of taking on some challenges in my past during pandemic. The things that woke me up in the middle of the night were those opportunities that I let go by.
And what are you most proud of?
I am most proud of not giving up. Not giving up and every time, doesn't matter where, any show that I do right before, I'm very grateful. I say a little prayer, I'm grateful. And I'm proud of the person I've become and the place where I'm standing now, because now is the perfect moment and is the only thing we have now.
And right now, what are you most grateful for today?
My husband, my marriage, Chicago, my new challenge, Velma. And the audience, every time we start that show and I hear them yell and scream, it takes a lot for me not to cry and yell with them. And just the strength that I am grateful for getting every single night to be able to come up there and be their Velma.
I'm so happy you're here today. We were talking before this recording that it's been many years since we actually were in person together. And it's just so nice to see you and talk to you.
Finally, I know. When you come to New York, we have to go have one of our famous lunches.
Let's do that. Yes. So I wanted to start with some timely topics. This is Hispanic Heritage Month, and you are the ambassador for Viva Broadway. I helped actually start that program back when I worked at the Broadway League, which is how we met. And yes. I wondered if you could just talk a little bit about your role and how the program is doing now, because I'm actually curious to hear too.
Yeah, well, I am very excited on that note to talk about that during Chicago, we're going to have a Viva Broadway night. I'm very proud of Chicago for actually taking it on and dedicating a whole show and a whole evening to Viva Broadway. We've come a long way. I'm very proud of that. Throughout the years, we've done, you know, events, and it's our job to sort of let the Latino community know that Broadway is for them as well, to sort of attract them and let them know that there are Latinos and Latinas representing, that that people from their community are on Broadway in productions all over, and to let them know about the latest news, right? Who's in, who's out, some discounts, what are the events that... the latest one that I am so proud of was the Times Square massive concert that we had between shows on a Saturday, my first weekend back in Chicago. And I'm like, of course I'm there. I don't care. But it's your first weekend back. I don't care. I'm going to do this. I need to be there. And I opened the show. So like when my curtain came down exactly at 5, the concert started at 5. I got out of my costume. I put whatever wardrobe, big color that I was going to wear. And I made my way from 49th Street to 44th. And there was the stage, and they were waiting for me, and I came out, and it was such an honor to go back in time. This is about 11 years, 10 years back in time, when I was part of In the Heights on Broadway, and I did Daniela for 4 months, and they allowed me to open the show with Carnaval. So there, to see all the Latin community that came out to support and more, to see this amazing lineup that Luis Salgado and Gabriela Garcia put together, I was so proud of them for directing this. And then meeting with all the Latin artists backstage and coming together, and, you know, it was just, it was explosive. And that's when it hit me. We've come a long way.
Yeah.
And this is just the beginning.
Indeed. But speaking of that, you know, a few weeks ago, we had the Tony Awards, and I was there listening to Matthew Lopez as he became the first Latino playwright to win a Tony Award for The Inheritance.
Yeah.
And I started thinking about, you know, there's roughly about 50,000 or so active members at Actors Equity, but only 3% are Latino. And the statistics for writers, directors, and producers is even less. But yet the Latino community makes up 19% of our population. So I just wanted to talk about, like, how do you think that we can move these numbers to be more representative of our country? And with Broadway's reopening, what do you think that means for the Latino and Hispanic communities?
Well, of course, there is a big light shining on now with inclusion and diversity, and it's people are speaking up. And people are saying, raising their hands and saying, hey, what about us? Hey, everyone, all races, cultures. And I think it's very important to remind everyone that this is, I mean, United States, it's made of everybody. And we're all here, and we've always been here. That's the thing. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I've been a part of Chicago for 20 years this month, the 24th. It becomes officially 20 years that I form part of the Chicago family. And this is the very first time that we have 3 Latinos on stage at the very same time. Ana Villafañe as Roxy, me as Velma, and our beautiful Paulo Sot as Billy Flynn. And they ask me, wow, you know, this is amazing. And I say, yeah, it's nice to have more people with me. For the longest time, I felt in a way like so alone, not until I came to In the Heights was the very first show where I felt part of the Latin community. Lin-Manuel like paved a huge path, and he's one of these pioneers that said, oh no, I'm going to get, my voice is going to be heard, and I'm going to include everybody. I'm going to call upon everyone with this powerful show. In the Heights is still playing everywhere, and it's still sounding. The movie just came out. Like, it's going to, you know, it takes people like him and to shine lights upon our writers and our choreographers and our producers and Sergio Trujillo, mm-hmm. you know, and Luis Salgado, and Graciela Daniel, and people have been here all the time. It's just, we need to give them more platforms so they can keep inspiring other upcoming aspiring professionals, artists. But I think it's a good time for everybody to step up. And that's why I feel so proud of everyone. And these events, we got to keep them going, you know? And I hope that we have more a year, because I feel that there's very few productions or events or parties or celebrations. I think there needs to be all year round and not just in October.
Yes, agreed. It should just be part of our, you know, normal life, right? Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Lynn and his dad, Luis, have been guests on this podcast. Yes. Anna has been a guest on the podcast, and Luis Salgado. So yes. I feel like, you know, these topics are so timely and so important to discuss. So I'm really excited that you're here too.
Thank you.
You know, when I thought of the idea for this podcast, I was thinking about philanthropy or social impact, charity, cause, purpose. There's so many words for this, being of service, giving back. Mm-hmm. And that's really the main theme of this podcast. And I wanted to ask you, in your personal life and in your professional life, what causes are important to you, and, you know, and why do you get involved?
Well, since because everybody has a different journey, right, of mm-hmm. how we got to New York. My journey started in Mexico. I was born in Monterrey, Mexico, and I started my career down in Mexico City. The reason I speak English is because I grew up on the border. So I lived in Matamoros, but I would cross the bridge every morning to go to school in Brownsville, Texas. And that allowed me to grow up with both cultures and both traditions and both languages. And here I am now, thanks to my mother, who was a Latina born in Texas. And because of her, I have the privilege of having the dual citizenship. So all that to say that when I was in Mexico City starting my career, I started becoming involved with giving back by singing at a lot of benefits and finding those organizations that were important to me, like kids to begin with. Mm. Aquí nadie se rinde, nobody gives up is a organization that I have supported for many, many years. And this was my friend's little cousin, Andres, died of leukemia, and then his mother, Laura, such a warrior, started this organization and helps kids with cancer and has always invited me to do all these events to raise money for it. And that's the first like sort of event that organization that I became a part of. And then I started saying yes to all of these people that started including me and asking me for help. Mm-hmm. I said, of course. And I'm like, but how much do you charge to sing at this benefit? Nothing. If I can, people are listening and they want to come hear me sing, and if I can help you raise money, I've received so much in my own life, the support of my parents to do this career, to do what I love, which is already huge, right? And all the obstacles and challenges that came my way. And I'm so grateful for everything I've received. My way of giving back is saying yes to organizations that need my help. And so that, and also, for instance, something that I did a lot during pandemic was saying yes to all these master classes that people started to ask me for, universities. Mm. And that was my way of giving back after being really busy, never really having the time when we were working or pre-pandemic. So I took the time to connect on Zoom and give them like a 3-hour class, a dance class, and sharing my experiences, everything that I've learned. And that's what I also, oh my God, this is the best connection and the best way to give back. Give it to the new generations. Mm-hmm. Tell them everything you learned and everything that I learned the hard way. So maybe you can save them time. Maybe if they're listening and they're willing to open up their minds and learn and receive this from me, that is huge for me. If I can some way motivate, inspire somebody to continue on their path and say, hey, it's not easy. A little girl from Matamoros, Tamaulipas got to Broadway. If it happened to me, it can happen to you. Right? When I got married 2 years ago, my husband and I, and the invitations, gifts, they said gifts. I said, no, gifts. Donate to these two organizations, which was the Aquí Nadie Se Rinde. And the other one was when all the whole situation with the kids being separated from their families down on at the border. Yeah. And that was my border. Mm. So we dug in, like looked for organizations and put those links onto our invitations. And we had people do that. And so any little chance I can get, any invitation I get, Bianca, can you sing at this? Bianca, can you come and speak at this? Bianca, can you, whatever. I'm like, sure, I'm there. You don't need to ask me twice, but there's not a lot of my, don't worry about it. I can do it for that. It's just a natural way also as human beings on this planet to you get, you receive, and you give. And that is the normal cycle.
To the folks listening to this podcast, Bianca, mm-hmm. what kind of advice would you give them? I'm assuming that people listening are interested in philanthropy and giving back. And, you know, how do people do that? How do people start? You know, not everybody has your amazing talent. So how should people, what advice would you give people to give back?
Even just the, like whenever I've watched documentaries or whenever I, and And then I become very compassionate about somebody's story that inspired me. And I go Google them and I look, how can I help this person? Or, and then I find their GoFundMe or their platforms or websites or, you know, and just supporting that way. Just find something that moved you, something that you believe in, somebody that you want to help out, some injustice that makes you feel uneasy about, and do something about it. That's it. And oh my God, we have our phones, we have the luxury, and it's so easy to look and explore and Google on anything. All the information is out there. It's so easy to find. And it's just, if you're, it's just find something that moves you and that you want to make a difference and you want to help this person out. Any little cent helps. Even all these organizations of helping the children, starving children all over the world, you know, just being a part of something. You don't need to be an artist, a singer, or anything, talented person, none of that. You just need to have a heart. You just need to have a good heart and the want to give, because trust me, that's the way the universe works. When you give and you help, it comes back to you in other different kinds of blessings in your life. You'll see that. It's only natural.
Do you feel like you learned or saw it modeled from your parents on how to be a socially responsible person? When you were growing up, what experiences did you have watching them?
Oh, for sure. First of all, my father is a doctor, anesthesiologist, and I would work in my summers as a little girl, put my scrubs on and go to the clinic and be with the nurses, and they would teach me how to, like, if the babies were just born, they would teach me how to, that thing that sucks out the mucus from the baby's
little bulb.
Well, I don't even, I remember doing that. Mm-hmm. They would allow me to hold this like this, and let's make little cotton balls for this, or let's make that for the babies or for the mothers that just delivered. And they would give me little tasks like that, right? So they make me work. And then we go to the kitchen and I'd see all the food being made, and I deliver the food with the nurses to the patients. And then I would sit and talk to the patients and just talk to them, and because they were lonely or whatever. And then they tipped me. And I'm like, what is this? Oh, they just said for the little girl, please give her this. And I started why? It's a gesture. It's something, they're grateful. So they're giving you this. And I started learning about that. I didn't do it for the tips. I enjoyed always speaking to people and making people laugh, entertaining them, spending time with them. And that's my dad. And then my mother, she was the administrator of the clinic. And just watching her, how she treated all the nurses and the doctors and how active she was. And then she, because we were raised Catholic, and every Wednesday she would go teach catechism. So she would go to poor neighborhoods and teach the ladies, give them, take milk for them and bring them, you know, things that they were lacking, and teach them about how to be a housewife, how to be a good wife, how to be a good mother, how to create their homes and to make them into homey, cozy places, peaceful, harmonious places for their kids and for their, how to run a house. And so my mom did this a lot. So I watched her and how she, every time I went to church with her every Sunday, the way she would speak to all the people on the streets and talk to everybody, treated everybody equal. And imagine that. That was my example, this lady.
Yeah. I've talked about this on my podcast before, but I also lost my mother, and she was definitely my inspiration as well. So
yes, every time they ask me, who do you look up to? Who's your, you know, inspiration? It's my mom. Mm. It's my mom, and just how humble she was, but how gracious and how grand and how super smart and just so classy, but at the same time, so down to earth. So that's what she taught me.
I do think that the seeing that modeled, you know, as a child, seeing that philanthropic, that charitable heart really does make such an impact on people. And that those small acts of kindness, right? Of just being kind people and giving back.
That's right.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SuffsMusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
So let's talk a little bit about the arts, because your career has been amazing. And I did 20 years in Chicago. That's just amazing in that Chicago family. So now you're back in the family again, but you've switched roles this time. So I have to ask you, how does it feel to play Velma instead of Roxy?
Oh my God. First of all, I've had the privilege of having this long relationship with the longest American musical running show, you know, Broadway history. So just that alone has been an honor. Roxy, I've grown up with her. I've explored with her. I have matured in every way with this role. And all of a sudden, after pandemic, they call me and say, what do you think about coming back? But this time as Velma. And I remember just freezing, going, oh my God, feeling the butterflies in my stomach. And I knew this was an amazing opportunity. And he said, it's going to be a challenge, but a delicious challenge. And that's what I always preach. If it scares you, do it. More the reason. If it scares you, you should be doing it. Because that's what we're here for. Conquering our fears and getting out of our comfort zones, because nothing blooms in comfort zones. So if you want to keep learning, growing, it's there. It's in the challenges. It's in the uncomfort. So that's why, to begin with, I said, of course. And now it's like a mind screw, if you may, because Velma's very different in every way. Her personality, her characteristics, her journey, her path. And then dance-wise, she's more athletic and she's more aerobic. So the choreography is very, very, very different. She's shot out of a cannon for each one of her numbers. And it's just crazy, the stamina that I have to, you know, build. And also vocally very different and in many, many, many ways. And at the same time, you have my ex-role right there in front of me the entire time.
Right. So in your head, you're going, I know that. I know that.
Yes. So what a challenge, because my brain wants to go there automatically. I hear an entrance. I hear a music that every single part of my body responds to. Even if I'm over here, not even looking, my arm will want to go on stage if I hear some. Imagine 20 years of listening to the same cues.
Right.
That's my cue to go down the stairs and be ready. Or that's my cue to and I still go through that. This is our third week. And I'm still, my Velma's with pins and needles. I have to be super focused on every single number. Sister Act, Velma Takes a Stand. They're so, so difficult and intricate. And it takes my entire brain to be there. Because if I place the chair a little off, I kill myself. You know, I'll hit myself, I'll bruise myself, I'll fall off the chair, something will happen, I'll, you know, go out of my center. And that's what's so delicious about it too, being a dancer. This is what we look for. The challenges, the things that'll make us work and sweat and bleed, and I have bruises and scratches everywhere, and it feels amazing. Because dancers, if it bleeds, it's good, you know?
So when you have your Viva Broadway performance you said October 18th, right?
Yes, October 18th.
So some parts of it are going to be in Spanish, right?
Yes, little gifts, little gestures here and there to include, because I know that we're going to have a lot of Latino press in the house, and not too much. We don't want to, you know, disturb, go out and turn our show into something different, but just little things to acknowledge and to celebrate and be proud.
What do you feel like is on the horizon for you? I know you have a concert coming up in November too, right? Where's that?
Yes, thank you. The Green Room 42, I'm returning this November 10th. It's a Wednesday, my day off from Chicago. Shannon Lewis is going to stage it for me. She's going to be helping me, collaborating with me. I can't wait to work with this goddess. I love her and admire her so much. And this beautiful, young, talented musical director, his name is Sean Forte. And I also invited him. So everything is fresh and new. And And I'm very proud of the song list and the story, you know, coming from pandemic, everything that we've learned. I consider myself a different person after pandemic and a very, very fortunate person.
Let's talk about that. What have you been doing how was the pandemic for you? I mean, I know that's a crazy question to ask, but you know, everybody's had their own story and their own journey through the last 18 months. What's happened for you?
Well, of course, you know, it wasn't easy. This is what we came to the world to do, and our mission, the stage, music, dance, singing, working, and all of a sudden it doesn't exist. The curtain comes down, lights are off, and that's it. So everything that comes with it, with the uncertainty of when does it come back? Does it come back? Who am I now? If I don't do this, what's my identity now? Mm-hmm. What do I do? I don't. And so reinventing yourself and try to focus your energy on other things. So the master classes and the teaching, if you may, became a very important thing in my life, but also my stepkids, spending time with them and focusing on them and helping them throughout their experience with pandemic, you know, the kids suffering, not going to school and their friends and the lack of social activities and all of that, and being home and helping them with doing schoolwork at home and doing their school at home.
Yeah. How old are they?
And I've got 4 stepdaughters.
Wow.
So now they're 16, 13, 12, and 8.
Wow.
So yeah, I ran a whole school at home. And so I was my own Mary Poppins and Maria. And because I did those 2 shows.
Right. So I know. So you're conjuring those roles, right? As you're sitting
little
there.
Did doing... I know they were preparing me. It was like a premonition, right? So life imitating art, which was kind of like spooky. Mm. But that's what I did. Family and our home. My husband and I were so fortunate to buy a home upstate. So we ran from the city in last July, and we were just concentrated on building our home and putting our home together and getting through the pandemic and making it as fun and harmonious as we could for the girls.
Where were you when, like, the week of March, March 9th or 10th, where were you that week when everything shut down?
I was at Susan Stroman's apartment. We were getting ready to do a workshop for New York, New York with John Kander's music, them both collaborating. And I was very lucky to have been invited to do a role in that. And so I had just left her house when then we received the email that evening or in the morning saying, okay, everybody paused. And then I had just finished one of my TV shows in Miami. So that had just concluded. And then I was getting ready to do another concert of mine, which I had to cancel. And all the concerts that I was doing with John Kander, Chicago in concert, very different from the Broadway version. This is with a symphony. We had done Dallas and we had done Kansas City because he's from Kansas City. And then we had to also stop that other concerts that I was doing in San Diego. That is resuming now in San Diego, actually October 22nd and 23rd, which I will take some time off Broadway to go do this because I already had this before Velma. So I built it into my contract. And so we did do the workshop, the John Kander and Susan Stroman's workshop during pandemic over Zoom, 2 weeks, 6 to 7 hours each day from Monday through Saturday. And we recorded 3 or 4 takes of every single scene. And we had to learn how to use GarageBand and order all this lighting equipment and sound equipment. And so that we could do this at home, create our studios. And it was very fascinating the way they did this, and we did it, and they did a presentational video in the end. We were invited to watch in December, and everybody with a glass of wine, we watched the stars of all of this were really the editors who put together an amazing virtual show. And I don't know what's going to happen with that, but I hope something good. But we all learned, and it allowed us to still sort of work and connect, sing and dance, and it was beautiful.
It's amazing how people have adapted and the resilience and now the comeback. So it must have been the first night you were back on Chicago on stage. What was it like with the audience? I guess when the curtain came up, it must have been just incredible, right?
Yes, because it was a new role for me. So I was very nervous about that. And then I'm in the elevator because, as everyone knows, the iconic entrance of Velma Kelly in Chicago is to the elevator. And mm-hmm. so I'm down loaded into the hole, right? Waiting. So from the beginning of the show. And so I hear everything. And I'm right there in between all the musicians. And the audience was just going wild. And I was so emotional. And I was so worried and praying, please, God, give me the strength to come up as their Velma with all the confidence and the strength. And that was, please allow me to sing this song without crying, you know, because it was so, so emotional. We were all so grateful to be back. And it was just a massive emotional explosion in that theater that day. And the weeks to follow, we thought, oh, it was just because it was the first night back. No, it's still happening.
Wow.
It's still happening because we still have audiences, you know, that are coming back for the first time after missing the theater. The lack of theater also happened to them.
Exactly.
They were missing it. They missed it. They missed it. And they value it so much to sit and have 2.5 hours or 2 hours and 45 minutes take them away from their everyday lives to vibrate in another frequency that heals and that exports you and that allows you to dream and it allows you to, again, be inspired and be motivated.
That's so true. I am one of them. So I felt that way for sure. I have to say, though, when I went back to my first show, like the first half hour, I was having this weird sensation in my body. Like I wasn't comfortable. It took me like a little while to kind of settle in, you know?
Yeah.
But then, you know, then it's fine. You're double masked and you're just, you know, trusting everybody and feeling that exchange of energy with your fellow theater goers and with all the people on stage and the musicians and the story. Yes. And it was just incredible. So, well,
I hear you.
And I guess we just have all become more flexible and who knows what will happen in the next few months or the next year. And I think you're a perfect example of how people learn to be flexible flyers, you know, and they learn to pivot. And you did an amazing thing where you had this full life and then you changed your full life to a digital life and helping your stepdaughters and, cooking and taking care of your plants, and now you're back. And do you feel like you have a different sensibility right now? Do you feel like there's a different kind of balance in your life that you want to keep from sort of the pandemic life to the real life or the post-pandemic, whatever we're in right now?
For sure. Living
with the pandemic life?
Yeah, that's a great question because, like I said, I think we're not the same people after pandemic and everything that we were allowed to live and to taste. Us as performers, gypsies, being on the road, on airplanes, living out of the suitcase hotels here and there, all of a sudden we stopped and took the time to live a personal life. I think we are going to miss it a little bit. It's hard to like explain to my girls, right? Like, sorry, I wasn't there. I get home when you're asleep. And then in the morning, I try to get up with them sometimes, but Velma kicks my butt. So it doesn't allow me. So I have to sleep to recover in every way. Roxy, I could do with my eyes closed, literally just had to put my heart in it. And that was it. My body responded. But Velma really takes a lot out of me still. I'm not in the moment where I can just do lots of other activities. Right now I can only feed her.
I don't think people realize, you know, how much it takes to become Velma, right? Every single performance.
Oh yeah.
But you know what? I'm so proud of you. And I love the fact that you've taken on this new role and this challenge. And, you know, any last words to people about sort of this idea of being grateful or giving back, being philanthropic?
Well, giving back always, like take a little bit of time to go out of your little bubble and see what's going on out there and see how you can make a difference. It's just a wonderful feeling to give back. And I think one of the things that I learned during the pandemic was paciencia y fe, which is one of the, you know,
patience and faith.
And patience and faith in the heights. And boy, did that come in handy. And that was the only way to live and survive during pandemic. You know, trust that there's a reason why all this is happening. Trust that there is light after this darkness, that there is beauty and art out of this suffering or pain or this loss. And patience to let it all unroll. Just let it happen. You know, do your part, but let the universe do its art. And the best way is also to find the ways to give back and help somebody.
Those are perfect last words. Thank you. You've inspired me so much.
Oh, thank you, Jen.
Thank you so much for being part of this podcast.
Of course. Thank you for inviting me. It was so good to talk to you and to see you again.
Love you.
I love you too.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Broadway Gives Back podcast. Broadway Gives Back is part of the Broadway Podcast Network. Special thanks to my producing partner, writer, editor, and friend, Jim Lochner. And thank you to everyone at BPN, including Dori Berenstein, Alan Seals, and Kimberly Garris. I'd also like to thank Julian Hills from the Bulldog Agency and Eric Becker from Broderick Street Music. If you like what you hear, don't forget to subscribe and rate this podcast wherever you stream your podcasts. You can also follow Broadway Gives Back on Facebook and Instagram at Broadway Gives Back Podcast and on Twitter at Broadway Gives. To learn more, visit bpn.fm/Broadway Gives Back. Thanks so much.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard. So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.